now going to dive into what the Bond movies have told us about the future going through the years. It is that time on a Tuesday lunchtime where we're joined by Morris Misolowski, our business futurist. Good afternoon, Morris. How are you?
Excellent. Happy Tuesday, everyone, and gong hei fa choi.
Gong hei fa choi, indeed. Yes.
It's amazing how quickly the year comes around, the year of the horse. Incredible.
No, round we go. Absolutely. We've finished the snake. We're into the horse now. So now, Morris, we've been playing Bond movie themes, which take us back to the early 60s and, you know, through all the decades. And, you know, they have pointed us in the direction of what might be the future over the years, haven't they?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I love Bond. You can imagine that I love them. I don't think I've seen them all. In fact, I'm sure I haven't, but I've seen a great deal of them. Mm. I love them for exactly that reason, because they're kind of a snapshot. The writers of this, the directors, the people that decide, you know, what that next film is going to be, they spend a lot of time and energy trying to figure out what's the zeitgeist happening. You know, what is it at the leading edge? They look at the technology. They look at how humanity's playing itself out. And if you look at the Bond going backwards, they really do fall into some themes. And you can see them almost to a decade. When the 60s films, the really early ones, to me were very much about fear. Hmm. If you look at what they were done, you know, they were in the 1960s, they were about Cold War and nuclear anxiety, Dr. No from Russia with Love, Goldfinger. They were all superpowers and they all had nuclear sabotage and the world was going to end.
Right.
And the villain had a flag, always had a flag. It was always a country in those 60s or so. And then in the 70s, it was about global destruction and elite madmen, you know, the Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker. There was lots of nuclear war. There was space stations, extinction fantasies, fear of annihilation. All those things kind of played out in all those movies made in the 70s. And every decade, I think, has a similar energy about it, a particular way that they thought that the world wanted to portray its villains and what they thought might be happening to the world.
Mm. Some doom and gloom, but did it point us in the right direction? I mean, after all, we never got a nuclear war, thankfully, did we?
Well, we didn't, and thankfully, hopefully, we never will and never have, but we're certainly what we think has come to the brink of it. We've come close, and these movies are a great way to really do things, hopefully, that we never do in person, in reality. They take us really close, and they show us what might happen if we do, and the kind of behind the scenes. They're fascinating. I mean, Bond has huge budgets too, so they can really portray it. They've also given us, I think, some really interesting tech.
Mm.
They haven't really been innovative. It hasn't really been Star Wars or Star Trek where we hadn't seen something before and all of a sudden we had. But they took everyday things that were around us and they extended them out. To me, one of the greatest ones is really the Aston Martin, car itself.
Right.
And what they've done to it over the decades and how smart that car was. I mean, it seems kind of simple now because we're used to cars being chock-a-full of all sorts of smart things and screens and talking and abilities. But think back to the 60s when that just wasn't anything we could even dream about having, how intelligent the car itself seemed to be. Forget what Bond did with it when he went into it to drive it.
Yeah, I mean, they had all kinds of things and they had tracking devices and phones in the cars long before it was ever possible to do that, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the other one, which was a bit Dick Tracy and some other films had it too, but it was the multifunction watch.
Mm.
He was always wearing a watch and they got good. I mean, this series of films was wonderful because they didn't invent, but they certainly made money out of product placement. If you look inside the films, I mean, very, very closely, you'll see that often they're wearing a particular brand of watch or they're eating a particular brand of cereal or they're driving a particular car like an Aston Martin.
Mm-hmm.
And those things, of course, don't happen by accident. They're all product placements. They're basically paid for ads where a company will agree to pay an amount of money and also product and then make that product specifically for the film. And it won't be shown in the garish way, obviously, but the brand name, the usage of, the background of is enough often to trigger us into thinking what they want us to think about it. And we've seen that quite a lot through the Bond films too.
Yeah, I mean, the Aston Martin obviously appeared in many of the films, but at one point in the 70s, I think it was in The Spy Who Loved Me, that position was taken by Lotus, and there was a famous Lotus Esprit in the film, which turned into a submarine, and then at one point ended up on driving up onto a beach, and he winds down the window and deposits a fish out of the window. It was one of those comic things. But really, that, as you say, product placement, and for Lotus, got a lot out of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, again, what these films do so well. They bring an audience to the screen. It's a franchise. You know, those that love it absolutely love it and will go and see them and literally spend every second glued to the screen, which is also unusual now because we don't really engage the way we used to either. We're very used to, or many of us are very used to perhaps watching a film, looking at a second piece of device, maybe it's the phone or a tablet or something else, and we're not 100% focused. We may only be 60 or 70%. But the Bond movies, for the reason we've just described, kind of get you close to 90 or 100% of involvement, which means they can do a whole lot of stuff that many films today just can't do.
I mean, that focus thing, I suppose, just takes us off slightly to the side for a second, but that is the beauty of going to the cinema, isn't it? Because you are so focused when you're watching something in the cinema, you can't really play with your phone in quite the same way or be distracted, can you?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, the cinema, you're there to do a job. I mean, you're basically there to do a task. You've taken yourself to it. It's expensive now, too. I'm sure it is expensive for your end as well here. Mm. Going to the cinema is a $20, $30 AUD Australian thing just for an adult ticket. And then you've got your choc top, the ice cream with the chocolate on top that you've got to buy, and the popcorn, all that turns into a $50, $60 event just for you to sit there in this chair. And yes, by that stage, you really do want to put yourself into the film and enjoy it and really not be distracted. And of course, in a cinema, we're told not to use our mobile phones or any other device.
I think one of the great things about the Bond movies was that there were so many little things in there, whether it was in lines that Bond was delivering, you know, clever lines, or just little details about the gadgets and all the other things. And that was one of the things about the Bond movies, which is so great. And I suppose, one of the other things that there's been a lot of in the Bond movies has been the use of kind of cyber warfare, those kind of things. And that's sort of predicts something a little bit, because those films started to use those kind of cyber things in the 90s, I guess, Morris, and things have come on quite a long way in that direction, haven't they, since?
Yeah, they did. And you're right, the 1990s was where we started to see tech power come in as the possible villain. Moved away from countries, moved away from annihilation, moved into tech being the villain. And by the 2010s, when you start looking at Skyfall at Spectre, you start to see exactly as you've just said, that it's all about cyber leaks, it's about surveillance, disgruntled cyber insiders exposing agents in Skyfall and global mass surveillance networks in Spectre. And really what we're talking about out there is like hell, borrowing from another movie, H-A-L, Hell, where the big device is now looking at you, and it, unlike people, unlike nations, might be the thing that causes mayhem and the world to be destroyed.
I mean, in those films, and 2001 A Space Odyssey particularly, but all the Bond movies definitely, it is at that point really about a fantastical view of the future. But sometimes it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? And the future becomes reality.
I think so. And that comes back to really where our imagination takes its spark from. That at times we see a movie or we read a book, and we see that quite a lot with the technologies we have now, really having their seeds back maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago when people were much younger and they were captured by it. For whatever reason, the enrapture of seeing the robot or seeing the spaceship or whatever made Elon Musk spend his money on doing similar things. And often it is a gender-specific comment, unfortunately. It's often the boys' toys that they spend their money on when they have significant money that come from their imagination, come from the films, come from the books, the sci-fis, the things they grew up with.
Have you seen anything, in films generally of recent that might point us towards what might happen in the future, Morris? And anything, any pointers out there?
Well, not specifically. I mean, there is a whole lot of negativity and doom and gloom in our movies at the moment, I think, and that's not a good thing.
Mm.
It's interesting, I've been charting over the last 10 or 15 years, really the gender balance that's pushed back into films, that if you look up till about the year 2010 or so, this isn't an exact science, but I remember I did quite a considered piece on it before this, that most of, in fact, all of the heroes were male, all of the conversations in these films were all male-centric. It was unusual to find a female in anything that might be considered a strong role.
Mm.
And over the last 10 or 15 years, thankfully, that balance has gone back to where it should be, and not about gender at all, but about humans doing things. And that balance has definitely shifted over the last 10 or 15 years, where we now find female in a very, very strong, forceful role, that she's capable of doing everything and anything, which of course is exactly what it should have always been. That's interesting. We might take it for granted, but going back to what I said before, culture, we grow culture from shared experiences. And if these shared experiences of film show us these things, then we begin to normalise them, as they should have been always. And that's important too, that our films do that for us. And that's the other thing that Bond did too. And I think Bond was one of the greatest proponents of it, that American culture, even though this was very English-based, American culture per se has really been the dominant culture since we've had movies because they were able to put things on film, get us into cinema, get us excited about them, sharing them, saying the lines, trying to be the characters, trying to play out what was shown on them, and they were always around American values. That was really, really different, how America was able to capture the world in the 40s, 50s onwards. And that's now slowly starting to change now that we've gone away from American-centric films. And that's a fascinating argument as well.
Yeah, that move from a male domination to female empowerment has been strong. I mean, we played a few clips this morning from various movies, and you know, that focus on the male characters has very much been there, and at the expense of female characters in the films. Do you think, Morris, that we will see a female Bond?
Oh, I would love to think that we might. I don't understand why there hasn't been a separate franchise if it's not the main franchise.
Mm.
And that, I mean, we've had lots of play on it. There are lots and lots of films which aren't Bond by title that have a female strong hero character that really could have been a Bond film. They're just not called that, and they go down a very, very similar path. I'm not sure where Bond does. I mean, at the moment, as far as I'm aware, and I might have missed it, but we're still waiting to see who our next Bond character will be.
I think you're right. I think we're waiting, right?
Yeah, and it's fascinating because, again, I may not have caught up on it, in which case this is wrong, but as far as I can see, it's fascinating to see the range of people that are being purported, none of which I think are true, but purported to be taking over Bond, and they're all not stereotypical. They're all not what we would have thought, you know, the Roger Moores and the rest of them would have been from the 60s. They're very, very different. It's kind of like Doctor Who. And I know we're switching genres and things here into film, but Doctor Who moved away from the traditional Doctor as well and became a female and became all sorts of other things, as again it should have been. That was really interesting to see how well that carried through with the audience, because the acceptance was really strong. It didn't lose their franchise at all for doing that.
Well, I think it didn't lose its franchise until quite recently. I mean, it seems that because Disney has just pulled out of supporting Doctor Who, so I don't know whether it has now lost its direction finally, and whether it needs to sort of come back to its roots and reconnect. And I guess that's the danger, isn't it? If you stray too far away from the originating kind of storyline, I suppose. But absolutely, I think we're actually waiting for Jeff Bezos, the head honcho at Amazon, who now owns that franchise. I think with him through MGM, doesn't it? And the word is that he's the one that's going to decide.
Well, it seems like it. Let's hope that when he grew up, that these things were important to him and he wants to continue them on. Because I think they're a really great rollick. I mean, they're a really great way to experience this escape, but also to experience some of these things in the future. And the thing that I do love from all of these, which is my takeaway always, and you know I'm a glass overflowing person, I always try and see the best, is that at the end, the hero wins. At the end, society wins. I mean, we've gone through turmoil. It's terrible. It's not great. It's not what we once was. But in the end, he is victorious. They are victorious. And the world continues on. Despite all of the calamities we think are going to face us, the world blowing up, all the rest of it, we just go on. And I think that's a really positive message to take out too.
Yeah, it's really difficult to come out of the cinema, actually, when that isn't the case. Otherwise, you just would not be optimistic about the days and weeks ahead, would you?
Absolutely, but we see some movies like Schwarzenegger's movies, which were great movies, but I think every day I get a reference to them as being the classic dystopian, that the world really will become something that is governed by machines or robots or AI, and this was long before any of those things really ever existed truly. I think that comes out of some of those movies, but James Bond at the end I think is usually an uplifting message, and the music and everything that goes with it, which also switched to female voices in the last 20 years or so, the title tracks from them. So I think it does lend itself to a really positive message afterwards. But fascinating for me to see what they think is the major villain that we will accept when we go in there, because we will sit back and we'll say, yeah, I can see that's the villain, I can see that's what's wrong, and I can see how Bond then vanquishes his villain to go on to something else.
Fascinating stuff. Well, using James Bond to look into the future. And, of course, AI may just take over all of this, including making the movies, Morris.
Well, it may do, and it'll be fascinating, as you said. We don't yet know who the next Bond is, and I'm sure they're writing it or have written it already, but it'll be really fascinating to see what they think is the next set of villains. Again, not being human, but will it be tech? Will it be AI? Will it be something else? Because that is what they think is the zeitgeist of what most of the world thinks its problems are coming from.
Well, we await with bated breath. Morris Mislowski. Morris, thank you very much for taking us into the future as normal on a Tuesday on The Brew. We will speak to you on The Brew this time next week. Cheers, mate.
Have a great week.
Thank you.